Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
To the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast, I'm your co-host Scott Parkin in San Francisco, California today. And as always, I'm joined by
Bob Bazanko from the Buckeye State.
The American dark side of the American dream. This week, federal prosecutors announced charges against 15 anti-ICE activists who had taken part in the protests against the Trump administration's deadly immigration crackdown in the Twin Cities earlier this year. They not only announced charges, but they made arrests. They went to people's homes and arrested them. It's obviously a case of overreach, again, by the Trump administration. The 15 individuals are accused of being part of Antifa groups who, quote-unquote, violently oppose immigration law enforcement. They're charged with conspiracy to impede and injure federal officers. And so we're going to talk about this with a return guest, Amy Stager. And there's obviously, one other thing I'll say is there's a broader picture going on here. We've done shows recently on Prairie Land, which was like a supposed Antifa cell. There was a case in Spokane. We had the Broadview 6 in Chicago, which actually had their case dismissed last month. And then also with Cop City, there were two people who were indicted on a federal case last week who are part of the RICO case, which is a state case, but two people got indicted federally on that last week. So Amy's going to be joining us to talk a little bit about what's going on in Minneapolis. Amy has worked for the Labor Education Service since 2020, and is a writer and a senior associate editor at Workday Magazine, but also can be found in Real News Network, In These Times, Minnesota Women's Press. So Amy, welcome back to the Green and Red podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And maybe just as an opening question, could we start off with what are these 15, I don't know if they're being called the Minneapolis 15, but what are these 15 folks in Minneapolis being accused of and being indicted for? It seems very different than some of these other cases in which I just talked about. So you can just kind of go into that.
Yeah. So I have been pouring through these indictment files, and there was also a press conference with the federal agents the other day, and they're basically being charged with criminal conspiracy. I think there's five specific charges: conspiracy to impede or injure a federal officer, solicitation to commit a crime of violence, interstate threats, interstate stalking, and assault on federal officer or destruction of government property. But a lot of what is listed in the indictment files is it's a lot of speech that comes from Signal chats and social media. There's not a lot of evidence of actual assaults on federal officers. And when Daniel Rosen was questioned about this at the press conference the other day, he didn't have any evidence to share of actual physical assault against officers. So yeah, lawyers are calling this an act of political repression. And we have a piece out about how several of them, maybe around five, I think, are pretty active trade unionists and active in the labor movement. But yeah, that's the gist of what's going on. 15 of them were charged. I think 12 were arrested on Tuesday. Another one turned themselves in the next day. And I think, I don't know about the remaining ones, if they've turned themselves in or not, but all were released, I think, on conditions that they don't speak to each other and that they don't engage in protests on or near federal property.
So there were like many thousands of people protesting. Why were these 15 isolated and chosen by the Trump administration?
Yeah, I think it's because many of these people have been very vocal about their views and their connections to their views, their anti-fascist views. A lot of them have said, I am Antifa. We need to stand up to the government abuse that is happening in our communities. They played really important roles in the community defense on the ground here. And so the targeting of them specifically, I think, is a message to the rest of the movement here that, you know, if you engage in these chats, maybe, or if you are saying these kinds of things or fighting back against the law enforcement activity that has been happening here, that it's going to be a chilling effect. So I think these folks were probably targeted because they had been vocal on social media. So there's a lot of speech that they've shared in regards to their views. And that's what the argument is, basically, that they were conspiring and they don't even have to have done the crime that is being alleged. They just have to be talking about it. And so sure. I think the government really is trying to argue that these kinds of community defense actions are that people should avoid those if they're going to be targeted by another operation such as Metro Surge in the future.
Again, though, this is like probably 100,000 people across the country have done this. So it really is a big message, a much broader message.
Yeah.
What we're seeing at Chicago and LA and New Jersey, Adelia, Delaney, incredibly broad.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And in addition to a lot of people think Operation Metro Surge itself was a form of punishment to Minnesota's resistance during the George Floyd uprising and past uprisings against police brutality. So I think a lot of people are saying this is just a continued effort to punish Minnesotans.
And there's two groups which are named in the indictment, Direct Action Minnesota and Black Cat Workers Collective. And they're supposedly quote unquote Antifa groups. And the Trump administration in the fall put out a national security presidential memo, NPSM 7, saying that's going to go after anarchist and anti-capitalist and Antifa, anti-Christian, anti-trans or pro-trans groups. And I'm wondering if you could just actually speak a little bit about those groups.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not a member of these groups, but I'm a little bit familiar with them, having attended some worker assemblies hosted by members of Black Cat Workers Collective. It's basically a group of local trade unionists who identify as anarchists and as anti-fascists. And earlier, I think in Operation Metro Surge, there was a response from the local labor movement here, particularly from rank and filers, to come together and decide how are we going to respond to this invasion of our community. And that resulted in several worker assemblies where members of these groups got together and talked about different ways that they could support the community, but also how do we use our relationships in these organizations that we are part of. And so some of that led to more support for actions like January 23rd, the day of No Work, No School, No Shopping. And some of that led to more alleged direct actions that occurred a little bit later, such as in the indictment, they look specifically at a direct action that occurred on January 23rd at the Whipple Building. And so the Daniel Rosen said that basically these groups are exploiting lawful protests to engage in unlawful conduct. And so making these connections between the historic almost 100,000 people going downtown to protest peacefully and pointing the microscope at these more allegedly unlawful actions targeting the federal building, Whipple, in near the airport. So yeah, these groups have supported some of these actions and are very vocal about being anti-fascist, and they've been supported by the immense solidarity and the neighborhood groups that have come together in this time. The outpouring of support that happened on Tuesday, where 80 plus people showed up at the federal courthouse, it really shows that these people are really cared about. And but yeah, those groups are, I think Direct Action Minnesota came out of those worker assemblies, and are not everyone at the worker assembly participated in those actions, of course, but those were definitely areas where more support and solidarity were strategically thought about. And yeah, I can talk more about those
That was my next question, is like, how are the workers, how did they fit into this sort of larger ecosystem that was happening in Minneapolis during Operation Metro Surge?
Yes. Yeah. So these were assemblies. They were hosted by members of the Black Cat Workers Collective and other rank and file community union groups, such as the Workers Solidarity Circle. And so these meetings basically were just to have a community conversation and talk about how they could support community defense. And I've been to most, if not all of them. And they were meetings. There was an agenda, a proposed agenda that was approved. And then there were ground rules. There were action proposals and conversations about what specific demands they were going to demand while after taking the action. There were proposals to support January 23rd, No Work, No School, No Shopping, and to actually go a little bit deeper and create more working groups on going to workplaces and encouraging them to become Fourth Amendment workplaces and trying to organize workers across the Twin Cities. And there were groups that were organized there that specifically wanted to engage in more peaceful protest activity as well as direct action. And so there were many, many resolutions that were debated and passed and some not passed, but they were all pretty lively, energetic groups of people. And the process was a few days before the assembly was to be held. People would submit resolutions, and then the people who submitted those would then present them and propose them at the meeting. And then there was structured responses to those in support or against. And then a vote of everybody who was present could have a vote. So it was very, very direct democracy and very lively debate at those assemblies as well.
The point of this, which I was to intimidate, but it frankly with him, it usually has the opposite effect and it gets more people out. And you mentioned that 80 showed up the other day. It's only been a few days, but do you already see a mobilization taking place in defense of these folks? I'm assuming they have plenty of legal representation already. That's already, in a sense, this is horrible, but is it really that shocking? I think this kind of stuff has become what you expect almost from these people.
Yes. Yeah. I think there has been an expectation ever since the end of Operation Metro Surge was announced that they would be changing their tactics a bit. And ICE is still here, of course. They're very active in Greater Minnesota as well. But I actually just came from today. There was a press conference hosted at the University of Minnesota Law School because there's a new report out by the Human Rights Watch and several community advocate groups such as National Lawyers Guild, who provided data and analysis. So they have a report. And so they held a panel press conference and talked about how this tactic they're getting more surgical in their repression of community defense here. And it looks like there is going to be more support for these 15 indicted. There's already a lot of support pouring in. There's funds for their legal fees. There's links going around for that. And as well as a lot of media attention on this.
And how is, speaking of institutional response, how is more mainstream labor responding to the 5 trade unionists have been detained? I think I read in one of the articles that I think it was the one that Sarah put out about these are people who are in the teachers union, for example. I'm curious how more institutionalized labor is responding.
Yes. Yeah. So local labor leaders, such as president of Minneapolis Federation of Educators, Local 59, Marsha Howard, and Karen Knudsen, president of Communications Workers, Local 7250, believe that these union activists are being targeted for a reason and that it's intended to maybe even make workers shy away from being opposed in their workplace organizing. And the president of the Minneapolis Regional Labor Federation, Chelsea Glaubitz-Gabio, has spoken in support of the right to peaceably assemble and advocate for change, and that these indictments are impacting workers who are using their voice to call for an end to this violence by federal law enforcement. There's been Bernie Burnham, president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, came out with a statement standing in support and calling for if there are charges, there have to be actual evidence for that. And the Minneapolis labor movement is responding to this in lockstep with in support of these of the indicted. We've reached out to president of the National AFL-CIO, Liz Schuler, for a comment, and they are referring to Minnesota's AFL-CIO statement.
The national labor unions are disgraceful throughout this entire period. Schuller, Fain, Sarah Nelson, even. They're just, they haven't done a damn thing. It's just, they have the ability to mobilize an entire country and they sit on their ass and refer it to somebody else. Sorry about that, but it just pisses me off. His Walls or Ellison or Fry or Craig or Klobuchar said anything?
Yeah, I don't believe so. I think there was a lot of pressure for them to have responses. And so I think they may end up coming out with responses in the next day or so. But as more and more attention, I think, gets put on this, they'll probably have to respond eventually.
They should probably be part of that Senate race, too, because Flanagan apparently is catching up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's got a lot of momentum.
And Craig, didn't Craig vote to praise ICE or shit like that?
She voted for the Lake and Riley Act, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Has come out saying that she regretted that vote, but a lot. I've seen a lot of her political ads saying that she has been an opponent to ICE. But yeah, that's a little bit.
I just want to note is they've indicted these folks for organizing, for protests that were, they may have gotten a little bit rough with. In between interaction between ICE and protesters, that's, I would put that on ICE. I guarantee the instigator of violence was ICE. But I just also want to note that the ICE agents who murdered Renee Good and Alex Pretty have never been charged. And they were like fled away. I believe that the ICE agent who killed Renee Good is actually back on duty, if I'm not mistaken.
Somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, in another state.
He's been transferred. Yeah. Obvious one is January 6th, right? Where you have actual violence and death and you get a $1.8 billion fund. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been criticisms of that too. And at the press conference as well, Jana Shortall from Cure 11 had asked Daniel Rosen about that. Like, how is the investigation going? And he couldn't make a comment on that. He just said they're ongoing, right? So I think Minnesotans are really, this is probably another flashpoint of, okay, you're saying you're defending the public, but you haven't actually pressed any charges against the law enforcement officers who have shown to be the source of violence in our community.
You also gone to the, we recently went to the AFL-CIO convention in Minneapolis, and then you went to Labor Notes in Chicago, where there's a lot of, you said there was a lot of homage paid to the Minnesota labor movement. And then I think that what we, the other thing, is a little bit of a two-part question, but the other thing we've seen is we've seen the rise of this Minnesota model of resistance from 2026. And I'm wondering, at either of those events, how much they talked about that. Workers worked with community groups and worked with neighborhoods and such.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of talk at both events about Minnesota's labor movement and praising Minnesota's labor movement for its response to Operation Metro Surge, but also the deep community organizing that has been happening here for decades. And specifically at the AFL-CIO convention, Minnesota's labor movement was awarded with a human rights award. And there were several panel talks with local labor leaders who were able to speak about how they were able to work on this response, but also what the broader labor movement should do. And specifically talking about the risks that union members took, especially on days like January 23rd, where so many workers who were under contract and in a time of labor peace took that risk to not show up to work that day. But when asked about how they're going to commit, and they passed a lot of resolutions as well, one specifically about immigration reform that I think is pretty notable, but there still is, I think, doubt and debate and criticism of what they're actually going to materially support and replicate Minnesota's example. And at Labor Notes, there were a lot of panels that I went to where January 23rd was discussed. And there was that specific day, I think, when there was that raid on the voter rights registration organization in Ohio that people were talking about as well, and thinking ahead towards the election as well. How can we prepare for whatever that day is going to hold for us? But there was a lot more debate and discussion around how to replicate it at the Labor Notes conference, whereas at the AFL-CIO conference, it was more about praising and celebrating the work that has been done. But yeah, I reached out multiple times to be able to talk to President Liz Schuller, and she wasn't available for questions, unfortunately. I was able to talk to Secretary Treasurer Fred Redmond, who talked about how Minnesota's example can be replicated because they have the infrastructure to do that. He said they have 65 affiliates. They have over 400 labor councils. There is the infrastructure there, but it's unclear whether or not they would support more withholding of labor to oppose ICE or what they're actually going to commit to materially to support spreading this example of Minnesota organizing. And yeah, so that's my question going forward is as the playbook for Operation Metro Surge is brought to more areas and more communities, how are unions going to respond to that?
Yeah, national labor's been pretty much like the Democrats. Thankfully, we have these local people who have done great, inspirational work. Last thing, and I know this is very early, but one thing I've been thinking of, because we talk about Prairie View a lot, and it's a different case, but Prairie View also took place in Texas, where, you know, the old saying is you get indicted a ham sandwich, right? Whereas the Chicago case, which involved at the time a congressional candidate, Gazala, they were thrown out. And what they found was massive prosecutorial misconduct, which I'm assuming is... So I think that's an advantage, being in Minneapolis. It's going to be a lot easier to find people who know what's going on and who aren't going to believe ICE like in Texas would. So, and I would assume the legal representatives are. Do you know at this point, like how to get in or to donate or to do anything or contribute or find out more about these defense funds?
Yes. Yeah. I think there was just one of the people who was indicted has a essay out in Labor Notes today about, it's titled From Cell to Cell, Jailed Minnesota Unionists Sang of Freedom. And so Emmett Doyle is a local union carpenter and folk singer who has been very active in community defense here. And there is a link there to support their legal defense. Yeah, legal defense fund for Minnesota anti-ICE organizers. So there, it looks like they've raised almost $100,000 already. So that is very heartening to see. But yeah, I think continuing to show up for these folks, I've been asking for comments from union members, rank and filers, and leaders about what should the broader labor movement be doing right now. And they've said everything from unconditional support for the 15 indicted to broader, calling for broader immigration reform. So yeah, well, I'll have a piece out hopefully soon with all of those comments collected. But yeah, there is a legal defense fund out there. And I think as well, just continuing to talk about what's happening is really important.
The last thing I would say, we did a show in the winter where we talked about the sort of militant nonviolence of the civil rights movement, how they faced all kinds of repression and murder as mm-hmm. well. And we very much, this show we did, we very much compared that to this. My question is do you think, I think part of the intended goal of the Justice Department doing things like this is create a chilling effect. Do you think, not Minnesota chill, but a different type of chill in effect. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm kind of curious if you think that it's going to have an impact on the people like in labor in Minnesota or people in Minnesota in general.
I think I lived here all my life and I've been reporting on labor movement and adjacent social movements for the past 5 years since 2020. And I think news and actions like this, especially the targeting of people who are just trying to make sure that their neighbors are safe, it will not have the intended effect that they're hoping that it's going to have. And it will actually bring people closer together and more engaged and willing to fight and continue. As far as I know, people are still really motivated to continue their community defense and looking for more avenues to do that and to keep it sustainable. There was a lot of events the past month and few weeks where people gathered to assess what had happened and then how do we move forward from this? How do we communicate to the rest of our country and even folks internationally as well? We've also been working, my editor Sarah and I, we've been working with the Mayday Strong Coalition on a book forthcoming with Haymarket Books about documenting what has happened and how folks can take bolder action in these times. So I think if anything, it's not going to stop anyone here, at least.
That's history. The more repression tends to create even more resistance. I mean,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. And although the signal chats might be a little bit quieter, or there might be other avenues taken for communication, like, it's not going to stop people from protecting each other.
I think we're going to wrap it there. Folks, we've been talking with Amy Staker with Workday Magazine. Amy, it's been great talking with you. Folks, if you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to us on audio platform, give us a rate and review. It helps us with the algorithm. And if you really like us, go to greenredpodcast.org and hit the support button, or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast. Amy, thanks for all your work. And we also look forward to seeing more and more come out about this from you and from Workday. Everyone else out there, make trouble and misbehave, and we'll talk to you again soon.